Welcome to Inside Track. Santa Aurelia LLC is solely responsible for its content. The views and opinions expressed on Inside Track are those of the host and guests, and not necessarily endorsed by KVOI or its advertisers, but they should be. And now, here's Bruce Ash.
Hello, everyone, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash, welcoming you to a special Christmas Eve edition of Inside Track. You know, while so many are focused on final Christmas shopping for the kiddos, thanks very much for taking some time out today to tune in to today's special show. We had our company Christmas potluck lunch yesterday, and it was so much fun watching our office and management crew exchanging gifts and being so comfortable together like the family that I think we are the other hundreds of days a year we work together. I've said this before, I like Christmas. Sure, everyone drives like a crazy person during the holidays, and the holiday can get the best of people's judgment sometimes, but Christmas, this is a great family holiday, and I hope all of our listeners have a great, great Christmas holiday. I want to give a shout out to my old friend Richard Fink, if he's listening. We had our annual Waffle House breakfast this morning. As usual, it was a delicious greasy spoon feast with Richard ordering the hash brown bowl with two over easy eggs, sausage, and a little sausage gravy on top. I had the pork chops and eggs, and it was something that was pretty special. We discussed politics and baseball. We solved most of the world's problems. Although my friend and I see each other often, I especially look forward to this day every year and always make sure I can get my annual physical before the breakfast because my gallbladder and my blood and everything would be all messed up. One last comment. I read with sadness about the passing of an old friend, Stan Abrams, a real estate executive and leader, community activist. Stan was an Air Force veteran and a real solid man. He was a man. We spent many hours together talking and sometimes plotting election strategy. Rest in peace, Stan. You were a good man, and lots of people know that. Before we get to our very special guest today, we have a few pieces of business to conduct. Our pre-Christmas Eve show is brought to you by Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, Imus Wilkinson Investment Management, and Corazon Cabinets. I've told you this before, and I mean it. All of our sponsors are locally owned, family-run businesses you should do business with. Now, Inside Track is proud to be part of the new KVOI lineup. I hope you listen to my friend Ben Bueller Garcia, who just preceded us on Inside Track. Great, great show. I know he covered some controversial topics. I also encourage you to listen to the other great weekday KVOI local shows, Wake Up Tucson, Mark Bishop, Bill Buckmaster, Steve Rivera, John C. Scott, and Jennifer English. They are great shows. This is an all-local format, and they're doing a great job. They're killing it every day. Charles Heller owns Sundays from 10 until 1. Sean Hoffhein will entertain you from 1 until 2 on Sundays, and Mo Cerrone right after that for the next hour on his do-it-yourself show. Jeff Prather has a brand new show, which starts at 4 on Sundays, and he does a great job. Very, very smart fellow. Tom, if you can, let's take an early break, and when we come back, we will greet double Hall of Fame recipient and Dean of the Southern Arizona TV and radio journalist, KVOI host, and very good friend, Bill Buckmaster. Stay tuned.
Reina, the Shish Kebab House, if someone asks you what type of food do you serve, you say?
Middle Eastern cuisine.
Okay, talk about the hummus with beef.
What we use in Shish Kebab is top sirloin, and we top it with fresh onions, then we use pine nuts. Of course, the seven spices, the Arabic spices that give that touch to the meal.
Now, if you don't know where Shish Kebab House is, it's right across the street from Park Place Mall.
Yes.
Preview their menu at shishkebabhouseoftucson.com.
Shish Kebab House, celebrating 25 years.
We love her spirit. It's our friend Carmen from Cay Bonita. Good morning, Carmen.
Good morning, everyone. Oh, we have a lot of beautiful jackets that are coming in, sweaters, long skirts, leggings, and I have a Mexican motif, and I have kind of more of a Spanish colonial. We just had a merchandise that came from Southern California. It's a lot of beautiful gifts, plates for the wall. So we have ornaments already starting to come in. A lot of different things are starting to arrive.
Get your Christmas shopping done at Cay Bonita. Cay Bonita, furniture.com on Tankerville near Sabino Canyon.
As you know, I advertise restaurants where I eat and recommend services my family and I use ourselves. Our money issues are handled by Imus Wilkinson, 3561 East Sunrise, 777-1911. Most folks need a good financial advisor for more than one reason. Here's one of the best ones. They'll keep you from doing really stupid things with your investments and property. Remember when it seemed lots of people planned to get rich borrowing money on their house so they could buy another one? It's now called the housing bubble. I have friends, as do you, who lost their homes playing that game who would have been saved by decent financial advice like you get from Imus Wilkinson. They'll keep you from doing dumb stuff. They also can help you do smart things. And Imus Wilkinson doesn't make anything by churning your investments like too many others in the business do. They make money when you make money. Give them a call today at 777-1911. That's an easy number for most of this audience, 777-1911, and get an appointment to have Imus Wilkinson see if they can help you like they help my family and many others.
Welcome back to Inside Track, sponsored by Corazon Cabinets, your locally owned source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets at wholesale prices. Call Corazon Cabinets and schedule a visit to the showroom. Call 488-2266. Corazon is located in the Butterfield Business Park. Tell Rick or Joy you heard this ad on Inside Track and get an additional 5% discount on their already low wholesale prices. Corazon just received a new container of great product, and they have cabinets available, believe it or not, for immediate delivery, something you won't find anywhere else in Tucson. Now, to our special guest, Bill Buckmaster. Bill Buckmaster is a five-time Emmy Award nominee, former broadcast editor for the Associated Press. He has served as a news director at stations in Las Vegas, Nevada, Visalia, California, and Sierra Vista, Arizona. Bill's many honors, and I'm probably not getting them all, include the 2011 Golden Mike Award from the American Advertising Federation, Silver Circle Lifetime Achievement Award from the National Academy of Television Arts and Science, and the Citizen Medal, that's Pima County's highest civilian honor. Bill Buckmaster is a Hall of Fame journalist in both Nevada and Arizona. And during his 50-year career, 50 years, and he doesn't look like he's been around for that long, his 50-year career in communications, it includes anchor positions in San Jose, San Francisco area with KICU-TV, and a KUAT here in Tucson where he hosted Arizona PBS News and Public Affairs' great program, Arizona Illustrated, for 23 years. He has interviewed more than 5,000 newsmakers, including me. There is probably no one in Southern Arizona who does not know of him, hasn't seen him on TV or listened to him on radio. His voice is familiar, and he is able, as no one else I've ever known, he shows his smile when he speaks.
How about that?
And people respect him, and that is a distinct honor for anyone. Bill even has the rare honor of his name on an asteroid, 20084 Buckmaster, which orbits between Mars and Jupiter. Bill, welcome to Inside Track.
Thank you very much. And I've never heard that before about a smile with my voice. I like that very much.
You do. No, it comes out. It is something that you probably just do it naturally. You don't even realize it, but it's infectious. And I think it really goes to how people feel comfortable with you, listening and watching you the way they have for so long, you know?
It's a real compliment. Thank you very much, Bruce. And this is a rarity for me to be on the other side of the microphone. I mean, I'm in front of a microphone, but I'm usually seated in the middle position where you are right now, and I'd be interviewing you and asking you questions. So it's a little bit strange.
Well, I'm always nervous going on a TV or radio with you because I say to myself, oh, God, what's Bill going to ask me? and as always, just a fair warning, I try to pack 8 pounds into a 5-pound sack.
Go for it.
And I have so many questions because you hardly ever talk about yourself.
I don't.
And this is, for me, it's a rare opportunity. I've been telling people all week on Facebook to listen to the show. So let me start out with the obvious. When did you break into the news business?
I would say I've always been interested in radio and broadcasting. Even as a little kid, my father had one of those giant shortwave radio sets, you know, that they'd light up and there'd be the golden glow in the room from the tubes. And even as a little kid, I was fascinated with radio and spinning the dial on the shortwave radio and listening to places, faraway places like Amsterdam and all these different places in Europe and South America. And I thought, you know, this has really got my interest to, I'd love to go to those places someday. And I've been fortunate enough to travel to over 100 countries. So that a lot of the dreams that I had as a child were kindled from that. As I call it, it's the magic box. Mm. It's the box that really got me going into radio, and then I listened to stations that weren't overseas. I was fascinated. I was like, when
we
the
had
dark.
Great Chicago
oh, yeah,
stations.
We had great stations. WLS, the powerhouse 50,000 watt flamethrower. When I say a flamethrower, that means it was such a strong station that you could hear it, I think, in just about every state in the country if the conditions were right. So I listened to the big 89 WLS, was always fascinated with Chicago radio. I loved WCFL. I can remember some of the early memories going to Little League, and my father would, or my brother would, my brother wouldn't drive, but my father would drive me to Little League practice in that 1955 Chrysler, a big Chrysler, and we'd be listening.
Fins?
Oh, yeah. I had the whole deal. And
lots of chrome.
You know, yeah, lots of chrome. We were listening to WCFL, and they were playing some 50s music, and I remember that song. What was it? A white sports coat and a red carnation, or maybe I've got it. Yeah, I think that's right. You know, all that kind of 50s music. And
bebop.
I was saying, bebop. But I was always interested not only in music. At that time, early on, music was the first thing that really got me going. But I've always been not only a consumer of radio music, but always a consumer as well of news in general. And we were talking before we went on that some of my earliest memories are of the Chicago Tribune, which was delivered faithfully to our doorstep in Wilmette, Illinois, a suburb, a leafy, beautiful leafy suburb north of Chicago, getting that, seeing the Tribune every morning. And I love to look at the newspaper. You know, and that there's a line in that American Pie song, Bad News on the Doorstep. Hmm. And I remember that day in 1959 when Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper died in that plane crash in Iowa.
Not far away.
But it goes back. I mean, I can remember even or in the mid-50s, even stuff about the Korean War when I was like, maybe 4 or 5
years old. You saw Douglas MacArthur in a parade.
I did. The earliest memory I have, my mother taking me, and I don't know if my older brother Larry went along, but she did say something about someday you'll be talking about this. Mm-hmm. This is historic. And it was Douglas MacArthur. One of the most famous generals, of course, of World War II, and it was July of 1952. MacArthur was doing a little bit of a parade through the North Shore of Chicago. He was riding in an open open-top car along Sheraton Road.
With his wife and son?
Yeah, I don't recall that, but I remember the general, and he was in the full Army uniform. And lots of scrambled eggs. And I remember a lot of gold braid on the hat. Now, I've seen other pictures that showed that he had a hat that didn't show the gold braid, but I remember the gold braid hat. And he was on his way to be the keynote speaker on July the 7th, 1952, at the Republican National Convention in Chicago. And that's one of my earliest memories of my life.
So I need to ask the Chicago questions.
Okay.
Cubs or Sox?
Cubs, definitely. In fact, loved the Cubs so much that I wasn't all that close to my father, but when we did bond, Dad would take me to Wrigley Field, and we would go real early. And why would we go early? Because we wanted to sit in the bleachers. And we didn't want to just sit in the bleachers. We wanted to be in the front row of the bleachers. And I would take my little baseball mitt from the Wellmet sports shop, and I would think maybe someday I'll get a ball. Something like that would happen. But some of my earliest memories with my dad were built around the Cubs, and so I'm a lifelong Chicago Cub fan. In fact, the question was, how did I get into radio? Well, I pretended I was in radio before I was actually ever in radio, because I was...
How many great broadcasters can tell that same story?
Well, I started in the backyard, and the garage was brick. There was a window, and unfortunately, on occasion, I would hit the window. But it was basically, there was a particular ball that I used that it was nice. You'd throw it against the wall, and then you could play the whole game, basically. I was announcing the game to myself. I was the Cub announcer, and then I started pretending I was the WBZ Boston announcer for the Boston Red Sox, because I would listen to BZ at night when I was tuning into KDKA in Pittsburgh, Coma in Oklahoma City, just all over the place. So then I would pretend. And then in football season, I would cover Northwestern, because my dad was a big Northwestern guy. And it was imaginary football out on the front lawn, because we had these big, beautiful trees on the front lawn. And I would pretend that each tree was a marker, and that it was like in between each tree was 10 yards. Well, it wasn't 10 yards. It might have been, I don't know, 4 or 5 yards. But I would go up and down. Now that I think about it, the neighbors must have thought I was incredibly disturbed, because I'd be announcing these games. That's kind of, I was in radio in my mind before I actually walked into a radio station in 1967 at WIND, WIND, the Westinghouse Broadcasting Station. Yeah. I was a Westinghouse broadcast intern for that summer, and that was my first real taste of being in a radio station.
Wow. All right,
and that was exciting, too, because Westinghouse, WIND, WIND, was part of the seven stations, the Westinghouse family. In those days, a group could only have seven TV stations, seven radio stations, and we had great stations. We had WBZ in Boston. We had the legacy stations. We had KDKA in Pittsburgh. We had WINS, one of the first New York all-news stations that actually invented the logo. This is WINS. Give us 20 minutes. And we'll give you the world. Yeah. And then they had out in Los Angeles, KFWB. And what was cool was at WIND, I could listen to all the different stations, because they had some kind of routing system that I'd be able to kind of play around with those while I was supposed to be interning. I'd be listening to some of the different stations.
Gosh. Oh, great.
Anyway.
All right. Thin slice or thick crust?
Thin.
Really? That's not a Chicago thing.
No, it's not, because all the Chicago things were really, really the deep dish. But I have... Maybe at that time living there, I would have been deep dish, but right now I'm definitely thin crust. And one of my great legacy sponsors is Vero Amore, and I love the way they do that.
Very nice.
Very nice thin
little
crust.
A little burn on the bottom.
A little burn. Great. Yeah, so now I'm a thin crust guy.
Stones or Beatles?
Definitely the Beatles, and I can remember in 1963, the Ed Sullivan Show. I was at my girlfriend's house. We're down in the basement, and we were anticipating, couldn't wait. And of course, that was the big deal when the Beatles first appeared on Ed Sullivan. I would later get an opportunity to see them in August of 1966 at Comiskey Park. And I often tell people the only thing that I remember hearing at the concert was, "She loves you." And then the rest was
screaming
yeah. and noise the whole concert. Yeah. So that's my exposure to the Beatles live.
Yeah.
I did see the Stones, however,
yeah.
at McCormick Place in 1965, and they had one of these great stages that came up from below, and the leadoff song was a song called Under My Thumb. Yeah. Anyway.
Wow. Your favorite movie growing up? What was that coming of age movie for you, or any movie that you loved?
Wow, I watched the movie Lost Horizon with Ronald Colman a lot.
Wow,
I loved that movie, and we were also my brother and I loved World War II movies. Some of the movies, Bataan, made a really early impression on me. So Proudly We Hail with Claudette Colbert.
Claudette Colbert.
Thank you. some of the early movies. And by the way, my favorite, you haven't asked me that, but I'll tell you anyway, my favorite Christmas movie is Since You Went Away from 1944. Joseph Cotten,
Claudette Colbert.
Colbert in that movie. And it was the first time that the movie, that the song I'll Be Home for Christmas was introduced to the American public. It was the Max Steiner, the composer. There was no singing, actually, of the song. The melody of I'll Be Home for Christmas first appeared in the movie Since You Went Away. And, of course, 2 years earlier, the White Christmas from Holiday Inn, everybody remembers Bing Crosby singing that. But anyway, Since You Went Away, I love that movie. As the railway scene between Robert Walker and then
Robert Walker.
Yes,
wow.
Robert Walker. And I forget the leading lady, and he was actually married to her at the time. And the railway scene as he goes off to war, and to Max Steiner's wonderful composition playing of "I'll Be Home for Christmas." Check it out.
I will. During the break in a couple of minutes, we'll look for that. Okay, your favorite athlete growing up?
Ernie Banks.
Yeah, how could a kid from Chicago not?
We'd even travel with the Cubs up to Milwaukee to see the Cubs play the Milwaukee Braves. And I think Ernie hit 3 home runs in one game up in Milwaukee. But definitely I was a huge Ernie Banks fan. Mm. What a great guy. And he would always
Great
person. And he'd say, "Let's play 2 today. You know, let's play 2 games."
Wow. All right, so
it's a beautiful day at Wrigley.
What was it like growing up in your household? I think you have a brother.
I have an older brother, and that was as far as it goes on that end of it. And I had, we had my mother and father, and my grandfather lived with us for a while, and he was an influence on me early on. I loved his stamp collection. I'd go up to we called him Grin, G-R-I-N. I don't know how that came about, but Grin was my grandfather, and we'd look at the stamps, and there'd be stamps from so many faraway places, like from South Africa, Orange Free State, all these places, and so I'd run to the Atlas, and that book. The Atlas became probably the most influential book of my life, certainly growing up, because that's where I learned about all the world capitals and where these places were. And I just was dreaming of faraway places. that I wanted to go to.
You'd probably be a very good geography player. We're going to take a real quick break and hear something from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Inside Track. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Mario, Dr. Bedoya's son of Dedicated Dental. Would you do me a favor? Whatever you're doing, take a moment and smile. Come on, just smile, as big as you can. There, see, that wasn't too hard. As silly as that was, I bet you feel better. At Dedicated Dental, we believe that in today's super busy world, smiling has never been more important. It instantly makes you feel better, and it's a gift to others. Did you know that many people consider one smile your most noticeable feature? So how do you rank on the smile meter? If you feel uneasy about smiling because of a dental concern, we can help you. Dr. Bedoya and his associates at Dedicated Dental have been helping this community with their smiles for about 40 years. Now that's a ton of smiles. And with our state-of-the-art 3D imaging and expertise in implants, it's never been more exciting. We do it all. Implants, dentures, wisdom teeth, root canals, cosmetics, whitenings, and cleanings. Call today for your free consultation with the doctor at 573-1900. Dedicated Dental, 573-1900.
I'm proud to welcome my good friends at Tucson Iron and Metal Retail to Inside Track as an advertiser. Jamie Kipper and her staff are conservation experts. They sell round and square steel tubing, metal plate and roofing materials, as well as new and used steel, aluminum, and stainless steel to ranchers, artists, interior designers, roofers, and do-it-yourselfers, just like all of the listeners here. Tucson Iron and Metal Retail is open Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., and Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon. Tucson Iron and Steel Retail, 701 East 36th Street. Call 520-209-1576 or go to TucsonIronRetail.com. And when you do call, mention this ad and receive an additional 10% discount on their already great prices. Welcome back to Inside Track. We're here with Bill Buckmaster, the incomparable news host and journalist that we've grown up with and known for so many years. Bill, we've been talking about your childhood growing up. Tell me about your parents and about what they did and your, you know, kind of your growing up time.
Well, my father was the head of the Chicago and Illinois Restaurant Association, one of the very large trade associations in the country. He later went on to become an executive, and I believe he was president of the American Association of Association Executives, ASAE, I think was the abbreviation for it. But he was, before that, he was an executive with Illinois Bell, and
A very busy guy,
and he wasn't very politically oriented. However, I would definitely say that he kind of was a Goldwater Republican, like most of the people growing up in the northern part of Cook County, Illinois. Everybody thinks of Cook County. Are you kidding? That's all Democrat. No, try going up
northern.
That's why
story.
I said northern. Try growing up in Wilmette, Kenilworth, Winnetka, and Glencoe, which encompasses the New Trier Township School District, which I think to this day is considered one of the best public high schools in the country. I'm a very proud alum of New Trier High.
Yeah. So
class of 65.
Bill, newsmen are curious. Were you curious as a kid? We've heard about your stamp collection, some of those things. But what were the things that you were interested and curious about as a kid growing up?
Well, I think my curiosity was, and this kind of dovetails with news, was geography. I just loved to learn about all these different places. And I think I was curious about that. But I've always liked talking to people. I always have felt that everybody has a story to tell. My mom was a first-generation Irish-American, and Irish are pretty good storytellers. Her maiden name was Regan, R-E-G-A-N. And I think that side of me, the Irish side, not necessarily maybe the Buckmaster side, which is English, but the Irish side.
That was a contrast.
It was quite a contrast.
Was there a debate in the family over that?
Well,
initially?
A little bit. You know, my mother was a Roman Catholic, and my father was Church of England Episcopal, and my mother, to keep peace in the family, became part of the Episcopal family and gave up her Roman Catholic faith. But yeah, it was kind of because, you know, obviously the traditional rivalry between English and the Irish. But the Irish, and my grandmother was a great storyteller on the Regan side. And I have always, to this day, felt everybody has a story to tell, some more compelling than others, but all of them are important and valid. And even as a kid, when I'd go to the barber shop, I'd always wind up talking to everybody in the barber shop about what they were doing and what do you think of this or what do you think of the Cubs. I think I wound up interviewing people in the barber shop.
So the persona that we know from broadcasting, that really has been a part of your life growing up.
It is.
You're a friendly guy, outgoing.
Friendly guy. I love people. There's a side of me that just likes to unplug away from people. I have that kind of thing where I kind of leave it on the. I leave it all when I interview people. I'm exhausted after a show every day, and then I just want to be alone. And so I have that side of me that is more of an introverted side. But generally, I would say I'm a very outgoing person who is curious about people's stories.
Who and what would you say were the great influences in your young life growing up?
Well, my baseball coach, Lou Varnick, was a, he was smoking a cigar and chomping on the cigar and Little League and stuff. And he was a real big influence for me.
How
my
so?
Little League coach. Just about, he would always just talk about competition and you know, he would say, Bill, I don't really care about if you're going to make a hit or if you strike out. The only thing I really care about is that you're competitive, then you always give 100%. And that really meant a lot to me, and I've thought about that a lot. And I keep thinking of early influences, and I keep thinking of those early days trying out for Little League. And, you know, my life has been about competition. This is not an easy business
right.
to go into. It's been loaded with competition. Before I was in here in Tucson, I was in a very competitive television position in the San Francisco Bay Area. Then my days in Las Vegas in the 70s, I mean, competing for stories. It's always been about competition. And I think that line goes back to what the Little League coach told me, try to always give 100%.
So you were a competitive kid.
Very
and
competitive.
And continue.
Oh, yes. And I had the older brother, 5 years older, and he was my coach in a lot of my sports. And I don't want to say that my brother pushed me into different sports, but I played everything. I played baseball. I played football. I played soccer. I did basketball. And so, yeah, I would say now that I'm actually thinking about it, that competition, that was actually all of that so helpful then for my career. Mm. Yeah.
So eventually you decided to come out west
right.
to the University of Arizona. Why Tucson and the University of Arizona?
Well, I had been accepted at Northwestern. That was my father's school, and he was hoping that I would follow him in that. In his pursuits there. He was a big-time athlete in the 1930s, a track star. And so we had always gone to all the Northwestern football games. We had 50-yard line seats. I was kind of a Big Ten fan. So it was kind of a natural thing. Also had been accepted at Wisconsin. We had a relative who was president at the time at the University of Wisconsin. My parents were going through a divorce. It was 1965. I was just ready to graduate from New Trier. And I don't know. I just wanted something different. I wanted, instinctively, I knew I needed to get away from the Midwest. So you're not going to believe this, but at the time, the University of Arizona had a high ranking as one of the best party schools in the United States.
Playboy survey.
Yeah. And I said, Dad, I made a decision. I applied to the University of Arizona, was accepted. He says, well, what in the world? And he said, fine, that's going to cost me a fraction of what it would cost me some of these other schools. So I came out here in 1965 to the University of Arizona, did not necessarily like Tucson. I think Tucson can be an acquired taste at first. It was so completely different than the Chicago area. And there was one time there where I had both my parents on the phone, and I said, you know, this was October of 65, and I said, I really don't know if I can hack it out here. And they said, what do you mean? You're going to hack it. You're not coming home. I was homesick. And so I stuck it out and wound up four years at the University of Arizona.
You got out in four.
Got out in four, did the four-year plan. I graduated. I was 20.
And what was your major?
Major was speech arts, which is now communication. And, but at the time, radio and television was under the speech arts. My minor was drama. Did some drama, Reader's Theater at the University of Arizona. The drama really helped as I became a TV anchorman, because half of being a TV anchorman is about, well, more than half, 80% is drama.
Did so, did you play any notable roles?
No, I played the butler, and the car is ready for you. No, you know, I didn't have a lot of great roles at the University of Arizona, but I had a lot of fun. That was good, drama. And,
were you in a fraternity?
No, I didn't do the fraternity. My wife was in the sorority. My girlfriend, now wife.
So I want to get to Anne.
Okay.
Because you guys, I mean, you were a thing in college.
We were. And
she was, and she still, and I'm not just saying this to blow smoke. She was. I saw a picture of Bill and Anne just recently that he sent to me.
Yeah.
A beautiful woman then, and a very beautiful woman today.
She is.
How'd you manage to
this
land such
kind
a
kind of an interesting story? We're talking about speech arts and radio and TV. This would have been 1967, the spring semester. At the time, KUAT was in Herring Hall. And for those that know, I've been around a while, Herring Hall, other than Old Main, maybe the oldest building on campus.
Yeah, I think 1906.
Well, something like that. And at that time, it was the home of the television, the public TV station, and also that's where we did our TV stuff. And my wife was taking Anne. My girl hadn't met her yet, actually, but I wanted to meet her. It was the spring of 67, and finally got a chance, got my nerve up to meet her, and we started dating in May of 67. But it was in that introduction to television, radio and TV course that Anne and I met. And I was the one. Each of us took turns playing the director. So I would say to the camera person, we need a model for my particular time with the students. How about you, Anne? Would you like to be on the TV? And so I think that's how it all began. And then I got the courage to ask her out. And our first date was over at the Iron Mask restaurant.
That's why you love going to
Kingfisher
today.
Because even in the bar area, you will see the original bar stools from the Iron Mask.
Yeah.
But that was our first date, May of 67. Second or third date, we saw the Doors and Jim Morrison at High Corbett Field, one of their first concerts, and they had just released Light My Fire, KTKT. 99 a.m., the rock station at the time, did 24 hours of Light My Fire in anticipation of the concert.
We're gonna pause here for a second now that we've talked about Light My Fire. Tom, let's take us to the next commercial break.
What? He got her Sonic's new Steakhouse Bacon Cheeseburger.
Guys, if you really love her, get her Sonic's new Steakhouse Bacon Cheeseburger and Tots for $4.99. Nothing says you're the best thing that ever happened to me like crispy bacon and black pepper mayo. One bite of warm, buttery brioche bun will leave her speechless.
It's
It's beautiful.
Hurry into Sonic for the new Steakhouse Bacon Cheeseburger and Tots for $4.99.
Tax not included. See menu for details for limited time only at participating Sonic drive-in.
Life is filled with uncertainties. Your career, your health, your family situation. They are all subject to change. So how can you plan for your future when you don't know what it will hold? I am Alan Willenbrock, financial advisor with Morgan Stanley, and I can help you. I will work with you to create a wealth plan and to manage your investments. And the great thing is, I'm right here in Tucson. To make an appointment with me, call me at area code 520-519-2330. Investments and services offered through Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, LLC, member SIPC.
Hello there, this is Nat King Cole wishing you all a happy and a Merry Christmas.
The joy of living is in the giving. So let's give lots of toys for tots. Toys, toys, toys for tots. Some have too many, some haven't any. If those who have, give those who haven't. Oh, what a Christmas day. The Marine Reserve will help you, will help you fill your sleigh with lots and lots of toys for tots. So give a little toy today.
Since 1947, the United States Marine Corps has been helping Santa fill his sleigh, making happier holidays for deserving children right in your community. Go to toysfortots.org and learn how you can make a difference.
Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash here. Our final segment today with Bill Buckmaster. Friends, there is no way we're going to finish. We're just getting into the Nevada days with Bill Buckmaster. So you graduate from U of A in 4 years. Did you and Ann marry shortly thereafter?
No, we didn't. It was a five-year courtship.
Well,
and it ran hot.
Long distance? Or?
Yeah, times. It was long distance. She was up in Phoenix. Then I went up there to work at three trade magazines, a road construction magazine and an architecture magazine. But we weren't really kind of dating at the time. We were both living in Phoenix, but it was on and off. And then we married in 1972.
So now you're in Nevada.
Didn't get to Nevada yet. I was in 1972. I'd been in the Bay Area working, almost could do an hour on this, at the time, the last independently owned shortwave radio station in the United States. Yes. It was KGEI. The call letters for General Electric International. They were headquartered. Their building was the original building from the 1930s and 40s. Where General MacArthur gave his speech, "I Shall Return to the Philippines." But anyway, I got a job there doing a little disc jockey work, the only time that I ever really was a disc jockey under the name Bill Stewart. Stewart is my middle name, so I used that. And so I was playing music and on shortwave radio. So that was my job. But then we were married in 1972, and then we went down to Sierra Vista, where I...
KTAN?
It was KHFH. I think it may be KTAN right now, but that stood for Historic Fort Huachuca, KHFH, and it was run by the time by a guy by the name of Ken Ferguson. And Ann and I, we were married, and then we flew down to Tucson from Phoenix. Ken picked us up at the airport with his little single engine plane and flew us to Sierra Vista.
And he probably flew to Libby Field.
For the job interview. And we really didn't have a honeymoon. I mean, we're there suddenly. It's like, when can you start? I said, well, you know, we really would like to take a little time. So we drove along Highway 1 up to Big Sur and through Cambria and all that great area, Solvang. So we did the honeymoon. But then we wound up in Sierra Vista, didn't have any furniture. our dining room table was one of those spools, those giant spools.
Yeah, the telecommunications
spool. That's where we did our Thanksgiving dinner. I mean, it was just it was bare bones. And so I spent 9 months there. I also was a stringer, what they call someone who feeds stories to the Associated Press from some of the more outlying remote areas. Well, I was the AP stringer in Sierra Vista and Cochise County. They liked what I was sending up so much that they said, why don't you come up to Phoenix and become our broadcast editor? So I did that, wound up there in 1973. Then I moved to, wanted to get back into broadcasting over to Visalia, California, which is in the San Joaquin Valley. And that was a great summer to be working in the news. In 1973, it was the farm workers' strike. I covered Cesar Chavez and the whole strike in the San Joaquin Valley. So then I left Visalia for an opportunity that really changed my life with the NBC affiliate in Las Vegas in 1974 at KORK, Cork, AM and FM, which commanded not only the number one station in the market, but had a market share of something unheard of. 35 or 40% of people were listening to that radio station.
A news talk or a
and
music
it was
station?
It was the golden days of AM, middle of the road
top
radio.
40?
No, it was not. Yeah, kind of top 40. But the morning guy was a legend in Las Vegas. His name was Red McIlvain. And here was this kid, me. I was his newsman and kind of became his sidekick. And it's just like one thing led to another. NBC started up a all news 24-hour service, which really predated Turner and CNN. This was in the mid-1970s, and it became called NIS, News and Information Service, owned by NBC, and I became the Las Vegas correspondent. And
did you have any hot stories?
Tell me about it.
Let's talk about them.
When you're working in Las Vegas in the 70s, when it was
Howard
a
Hughes.
Syndicate-friendly town, Howard Hughes.
And, lots of corruption there.
Oh, lots of bodies turning up in the desert almost, you know, every day. But Howard Hughes, and when he died in 1976, and there was the whole battle over the will. Melvin Dumar, folks may remember that name, who died recently at the age of 75. He was the one that claimed that Howard Hughes left him a will and named him as one of the recipients along with the Mormon Church. There was a big trial. I covered all of that. And they actually made a movie called Melvin and Howard. Jason Robards played in that movie, and that was all about that period where supposedly Howard Hughes that Melvin Dumar picked up Howard Hughes one night, and it's kind of part fantasy, but the jury never bought into the fact that it was that Dumar did that. There was every imaginable handwriting expert took the stand, and some said they validated. Others said no, but in the end, it was thrown out. But anyway, I covered all of that.
There was a big thing with, was it Walter Mayhew?
Mayhew, and over the whole thing about what they called kind of the Mormon mafia, because all the people around Hughes were Mormons, and this group and Mayhew and who is going to get a piece of his empire, which was called the Summa Corporation, right, which owned pretty much every big hotel at the time in Las Vegas. That was a fascinating time to be in Las Vegas because that was the intersection of a syndicate, a mob, if you will, a mob town, which was going to figure out and finally had to figure out, we can't continue with this pattern and make money. So let's make it a Disneyland. Let's make it a family-friendly place, because when I was in Las Vegas in the 70s, kids weren't allowed in the casino.
No.
You didn't see kids.
I went with my father when I was a senior in high school,
and
my dad loved to gamble there.
Yeah.
And I was with him at the craps table. He took out a $10,000 marker, and like in 2 seconds, he was up like $25,000. I'll never forget it, Bill. I tried to walk away from him because I was bored to tears, right? He grabbed a hold of my Letterman's jacket that I was wearing and pulled me back. He said, "Don't you go any place. You're my lucky charm." But I was, yeah, I don't remember ever seeing another kid.
No,
they
weren't very rare to see kids. But what's fun about, not only did I do news stories for NBC, I also did sports. And those were the golden days of some of the big fights. My first heavyweight fight I covered was Muhammad Ali fighting a guy by the name of Ron Lyle in 1975. Oh, yeah. And Ali won
that. He beat him to a pulp, if I remember.
Well, I was ringside, but I was also ringside at the big fight. And this was one of the big kind of news events of really in my entire career. I was ringside for NBC Radio News at the Muhammad Ali Leon Sphinx fight in February at the Hilton Hotel of 1978, and that was an experience I'll never forget. Sphinx won the fight. It was a decision. It went all 15 rounds, but it was so noisy in there, and I had this telephone, ringside.
Where did they hold the fight?
At the Hilton.
It was at the Hilton.
Yeah, and so they were going to break the network. In those days, they would break a network on a big story on the whole NBC network, and they were going to break it and go to me at ringside, because there had just been this monumental, stunning upset. We're going to go to Bill Buckmaster at the Hilton Hotel in Las Vegas, where Muhammad Ali has just lost his crown. Well, I was talking to the producer. I said, look, it's so noisy. I'm going to climb under the table at ringside, and all I want you to do is yell at the top of your voice, go. Give me one word, go, that I will be able to hear that I am live on the network. And then I went live, and that was a huge story.
It was a huge story, and it was a big upset.
Oh.
And your connection with sports, was that something you would have liked to have done?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, other than back to the Cub days and being an imaginary sports, I never really was going to go that way, but I'm so glad I had that opportunity. And it wasn't just the boxing and covering like Ernie Shavers and Kenny Norton had one particularly bloody fight at Caesars that I recall. But anyway, it wasn't just boxing. I covered tennis, Jimmy Connors, some of those big matches that they would have at Caesars. So I did sports.
I saw a picture of you. We only have a couple minutes left. We're coming back with another show, Bill.
Okay.
We're going to do this.
We'll do it in the first quarter of 2019. Yeah, yeah. How's that?
So I saw a picture of you outside of an airplane,
mm-hmm.
Interviewing somebody. You're wearing the trench coat.
Right.
Okay. I'm assuming it was cold.
It was. But that was actually all the way back to Tucson when I was shooting some photos.
That's right,
for the Arizona Daily Star, the Judy Collins band, when I covered that, her concert. Yeah.
So in those days... Yeah. You had this big tape recorder.
I had a big tape recorder.
That was over your shoulder, and you're taking interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you would then take those back to the radio station,
oh, yeah.
edit them down.
Yeah, the earliest way we would send stories, we'd use something called alligator clips.
Oh.
You would take off the sound piece in the phone, and you'd hook up that way, and you'd get a pretty good little signal through your phone. Mm-hmm. We'd use that for doing our voicers and things. Of course, there was no digital stuff, and that's maybe for the next show about the early days of... I remember when we used to use film and TV news, and then we went to videotape. And oh man,
you've been through
a
through
lot.
The crucible.
51 years, huh? Yeah.
Wow. Well, Bill, we're going to come back next time in the first quarter, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very, very revealing,
it.
And a lot of fun. I hope listeners you're enjoying this, and we got lots and lots of stuff to cover with Bill. Look, please support our great advertisers. Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these businesses are great companies. They're well-run, local, family-run, and all the profits stay here in Tucson to help our community. I know each of these owners. They love our hometown, and they deserve our support. So until next time, for Inside Track, this is Bruce Ash wishing you a very, very Merry Christmas and a great good afternoon.